From Radio Catskills Studios in Liberty, New York, this is the Local Edition. I'm your host, Jason Dole. Thank you so much for being here with me this evening. Coming up, we get an update on the revitalization of Sullivan County's International Airport. Dan Hoost will be joining me live. We also have my full report for the next steps of the big school merger. In northern Sullivan County, Livingston Manor, Roscoe School District is now one district, but it has a lot of work to do to get up and running. I've got my full report on that in just a moment, but first, big news of this past weekend was the fire that broke out at the historical Nevely Hotel in Allenville, New York. And that happened on Saturday morning. Firefighters from multiple local departments quickly responded. They contained the blaze to the main lobby area. Chuangang Journal's reporter Chris Rowley spoke with Radio Catskills' Patricio Ramayo about the fire.
This is the second fire at the old Nevely Resort inside a year, and not welcome at all. But early on Saturday morning, somewhere around 5:30 to 6 o'clock, this fire broke out. By 6 to 6:30, fire companies all across the area were up and awake. The sirens were going. Allenville Fire Force responded. But, of course, along with that came engines and equipment and men from Summitville, from Cragsmore, from Cahonkston, from Napanock, and even from Walker Valley. It was a full, you might say, the wider fire community response. And the fire had broken out in the old main entrance lobby area, which was completely ablaze. It was absolutely on fire. We don't know yet if and how far the fire might have spread from there, but this fire went on all day. It was finally basically put out about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And by that point, the town building department had secured an excavator from a contractor, and they were pulling it all apart and pushing it around and making sure that the fire was really out and putting some parts over here and other parts over there and so on. Anyway, it is out now, and we've heard from the owners of the property thanking the firefighters for their heroism and for their effort. We hope this will be that. Mayor Trent of Allenville said, a huge thank you to the firefighters who got there so quickly and managed to bring this under control. Any big fire like this is scary, and fortunately, they were able to get hold of it and stop it spreading. And we've had also had a report from Ulster County Fire, and they say basically that the main building was on fire. That building housed the main lobby, which is where it broke out, I'm pretty sure, but also the kitchen, the dining room, and the theater. Nobody is really sure at this point how it started, but the suspicion is that it was homeless people, homeless men most likely, starting a fire to keep warm. But we don't know yet anything at all. So that's what we know at this point, and we hope this will not be repeated. It's a lot for our fire companies to have to spring to life on Saturday morning and rush out and do this, but they did. And once again, a huge vote of thanks to all the volunteer fire in our area. They do so much, and we are so grateful to them.
And again, that's Chris Rowley from the Chuangang Journal, who checks in with Patricio Ramayo usually on Friday evenings right here on the Local Edition with news from the Allenville area. Now, last week, I took a trip out to Livingston Manor Central School to attend a meeting that was going on out there, and I have a full report for you right now, and this is how it starts. Livingston Manor and Roscoe are two small hamlets in the town of Rockland, the northernmost township in Sullivan County. They're just 6 miles apart. But the two communities got even closer on December 19th when, after decades of discussion, residents in Roscoe and Livingston Manor finally voted to fully merge their two school districts.
As of the 19th, we are one school district. The two schools continue to operate till June 30th, but for all intents and purposes, all of the actions of this new board of education are for the newly created school district.
That's John Evans, superintendent of the now unified Livingston Manor Roscoe School District, addressing residents this past Thursday evening, January 9th. They met in the old auditorium at Livingston Manor Central School. Robert DeFore, district superintendent and CEO of Sullivan County BOCES, was also there to facilitate. In all, about 5 dozen folks were in attendance. Although this was the first public meeting since the merger vote, the purpose of Thursday's meeting was not to pick a name for the new school or a color or a mascot for its sports teams. It wasn't even about the district's staffing or how its existing facilities are now going to be used. Those decisions and many others need to be made by the new district school board, and it doesn't exist yet. So Thursday's meeting was all about getting that board in place as soon as possible, following a process from the New York Department of Education. So Thursday's meeting was all about getting that board in place as soon as possible, following a process from New York's Department of Education. Prospective board members were able to get petition forms at the meeting. They have 2 weeks to fill out and return the forms complete with 25 signatures. Then, on February 13th, residents will vote for their new school's 7-member school board. That entire process from last Thursday's meeting to that school board election is just 5 weeks long. A lot of time at the meeting was spent just explaining all of these details and deadlines and fielding questions from the public about the whole process.
Who determined these dates in the election, and can they push back?
The State Education Department set those dates.
Once the vote occurs to merge a district, the State Education's charge is to establish that new board as soon as legally possible.
The new board doesn't have any authority to the school district merge that people.
No, they do. This board, and that's where a merger is different than a normal board election. So these 7 individuals being elected on the 13th are being sworn in on the 18th and begin the work of the new school district. So their terms...
It's a non-existent school district, yes.
It exists in the eyes of the state.
It is already in existence. At the time that the consolidation vote is approved, the district came into existence. This is the first step, electing a school board to govern a new district.
As you heard there, Evans and DeFore answered a question about the expedited timeline of selecting a new board, but they also had to go back and explain details about the district's current status. And that's not surprising. The district is in a state of transition that will last for most of the coming year, and that's confusing. For instance, although the new district exists as of December's vote, the 2 current school districts also still exist through the end of June. And their boards will continue to exist through the end of August. Here again, it's Robert DeFore.
It's also important to realize that the existing boards will still meet because they still have to operate and wind down operations in the 2 separate entities, while the new board will also meet. So if there's individuals on the current board, on the new board, they're going to get a very busy couple of months.
And this is something that we sat down with the attorneys with yesterday. So Roscoe and Manor, those existing board members, their terms actually go until August 1st. They don't end at June 30th like a normal board term would end. They go until August 1st because as Roscoe and Manor cease to exist on June 30th, there's still bills that have to be paid and things that have to be done as those respective school districts. And those boards will still continue to meet from now until June, doing what they normally would do, except they're not going to be building budgets. So theoretically, the existing board meetings should become shorter and quicker because the actions of the board are going to be streamlined because they're only doing the day-to-day business of the school, like approving warrants and things like that. They're not hiring people and things like that. Those would be things that the new board will be doing. So those meetings should get shorter. Some of them that were scheduled just for budget workshops and budget hearings are going to be eliminated because they're not necessary because the existing boards aren't building a budget. The new board is building a budget for the new district. So there's going to be less meetings of the existing boards, but more meetings of the new board.
So folks living in Livingston Manor and Roscoe are going to have 3 school boards from February through August. But in the middle of all that is the July 1st deadline. Evans explained that so many decisions have to be made by then because that's when the current school districts officially cease to exist.
This is why this board begins action now and has the legal authority because, for example, with school vehicles, Roscoe and Manor cease to exist on June 30th. All of those vehicles, their registration and titles are no longer valid because those school districts don't exist. They have to be re-registered at the DMV under the new school name. So that name piece, by default, is Livingston Manor hyphenated Roscoe. If it's going to be something else, that's the first decision that the new board has to make because everything that gets set up at the state education department hinges on the school name.
There's a whole registration process of names with the state education department to issue identification numbers, access to financial information, calculations of ratios. Without a name, they can't do any of that.
With so much to decide in so little time, Evans made it clear that any prospective member of the new board will be very busy.
I have recommendations for the new board. Whether they follow those recommendations or decide to do something different, that is entirely up to them. I have no authority to tell them what to do. Those are board decisions. But in my conversations, I'm going to be recommending that the new board meet at least twice a month because the number of things that have to be decided on at a very rapid rate, if we only meet four times between now and July, July is going to be a mess.
Some in the audience seem to be very concerned about who may or may not wind up on the new Livingston Manor Roscoe School Board, how they make their decisions, and whether those decisions will reflect the wishes of community members. To that end, Superintendent Evans said he's recommending the new board create committees designed to get community input.
I've spent the last couple weeks meeting with superintendents from around the state that have gone through the merger process. There's not a lot of them because the last one that occurred was 6 years ago and the one before that was 12. And then you get to 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. But in speaking with them, I've taken what they've learned through that process and put together a structure that I am going to go with the new board with on what I think will involve the most community input, put in the most checks and balances and accountability measures that we have been hearing about throughout this process so that as the new school district gets created, people feel involved and people feel heard.
The next step in the process to select a school board for the new Livingston Manor Roscoe School District comes January 23rd, when prospective members' petitions are due in and the full ballot will be drawn up. The school board election is February 13th. And we, of course, will be keeping you up to date on the developments of this story. As you heard there, it's going to be a very busy year in Livingston Manor and Roscoe. After the meeting on Thursday, I took the time to talk to some of the board members on hand from the existing school boards in Livingston Manor and Roscoe. And here is somebody from Roscoe.
My name is Gary Dahlman. I'm a current board member in Roscoe since 1998. I've been on. I've seen a lot of changes in 26 years, and it's gotten harder and harder to be a small school district, and I'm really glad that this merger went through. Declining enrollments in both schools are becoming a problem, and I think it's going to be a really good thing for the community.
Why do you think this time it worked? What's different this time that the communities came together and said, this is what we're going to do?
Well, Roscoe and Manor have been doing a lot of things together already. And they've been working, and they've been working well. And, the governor, 2 years ago, the state aid incentive aid to do this was a lot less money than it was this time. The state wanted to provide an incentive aid that made it very attractive for schools to merge. So that's why it went from, $7 million to $30.7 million over 14 years. And that's a good incentive.
So the deal got better till the community couldn't refuse.
Yeah. But I think people realize, that both towns, can benefit educationally. It'll be a lot better for the kids. We're already doing sports together. That's, it'll be good for everybody.
So what do you think about this whole process and the steps that you got to go through?
Well, state ed has their rules. And this is the process that we have to go through. And it'll work out, you know. Things will work out. I mean, people have questions. We have questions. And you just work through them.
What do you think about Superintendent Evans' idea about having those committees to field some of the community's questions and concerns as the new board makes these decisions?
That's really good. You know, we want to involve the community. Hopefully, you know, a lot of times we don't get much participation at board meetings. So hopefully if there's committee meetings, people will come out and give their opinion. And, you know, we want what to do what the community wants. Yeah. And that's how you do it, is you get input from as many people as you can.
You had about 60 folks here tonight. Was that a decent turnout?
Yeah, it is. Yep. We'll see how it goes.
Hi, my name is James Buck. I'm currently the board president of the Livingston Manor Central School District Board of Ed. I've been on the board for 6 years and been the president for three, I believe. So as far as this process goes, I think, I think the process, unfortunately, we don't have a lot of leeway with how the process operates. It's set in statute by the state ed. It would be nice if we had some more time to plan, but we don't. So we are doing the best we can within the time frames we have. I feel good about the outcome of the merger vote. I think for our the children in our community, I think they're going to benefit. I think the taxpayers will benefit. I think the longevity of having a small rural school will be there, as opposed to us trying to exist as two separate school districts, given the outlook for state funding. We saw that, Livingston Manor saw that this past budget cycle with a $1.3 million proposed cut in education funding. And if that is the trend going forward, I think we have to look at ways to consolidate, ways to save money, and still provide a high-quality education for our children. So I think we're doing the right thing.
That's an interesting angle. I don't think I've heard somebody put it quite that way. What you're saying is, you know, if people have concerns over these two districts retaining their rather unique, like, rural identities, you're saying they've got a better shot of doing that by teaming up.
Yes, I believe so, because I think what would happen from what I saw in my experience on the board and trying to develop a budget during this last budget cycle was that the state's decision to cut funding towards our district, which we ended up getting back. We ended up getting the funding cut, but I think that's the long-term trend. State funding is going to decrease, and as we know, inflation's going up, costs are going up, and we still want to provide the best quality education for our children. So the only way to do so is to consolidate where we can and save money where we can, and I think this is the best way to do that.
But from the perspective of the folks in the community, what do you think, if anything else, changed for them that this vote, people have been talking about this for decades and decades, what do you think changed that people actually went for it this time among the general voters?
I think this time we had, this time we used a petition process to move from the first step to the binding vote. In previous times when these schools have attempted to merge, we used a straw vote process where the two communities voted and one would vote it down, the other might pass it, and that stops the process. This time we used the petition process. So that forced people to have individual conversations with people signing the petition. So whether they were for it or against it, we were able to talk to people in the community and say, this is maybe how it'll benefit. This is maybe how it'll benefit you personally and benefit the children of the community. So those conversations were had. I think that both districts did a better job getting that information out to the community. Ultimately, the community decided, and it's about two-thirds decided to pass for this merger. So I think there is community support. We always hear the negative voices. They seem to be louder than the positive ones. But I think in the long term, the community will be better for it.
Anything else you want folks to know that I didn't ask you about?
No, I just think people should know that in the long term, our students and our community is going to benefit from this. We're going to be able to offer more opportunities for our kids and continue to provide the great education that both districts have provided for many, many years. We're taking a step in the right direction.
All right, thanks for talking.
Thanks, Jason.
You're listening to The Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul will deliver her third State of the State address tomorrow, laying out her vision for the year ahead. Join Radio Catskill for live special coverage from the New York Public News Network starting at 1, hosted by Dave Lombardo with analysis from Ian Pickus and Chantel Smith before and after the address. It's the 2025 State of the State Address tomorrow afternoon at 1 on Radio Catskill. Local news, culture, and NPR.
I think it's kind of a cultural sea change for the tech industry, and it's being pushed forward by some of these really loud and influential voices that have just been kind of fed up with the direction that our broader culture, but also specifically tech culture, has been moving, you know, for the last 15 years.
I'm Michael Barbaro. That's Today on The Daily from The New York Times.
Coming up in just 9 minutes right here on Radio Catskill, this is the local edition. I'm Jason Dole, and as we wrap up the program here, let's go live now to the phone to check in with Dan Hoos, Communications Director for Sullivan County, who's here to share an update on the revitalization of the Sullivan County International Airport. Dan, welcome to the local edition on Radio Catskill.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
Listeners might be more used to hearing you in the mornings. You're on every Friday morning with Tim. Of course, we do county updates as often as we can here at the beginning of the week on the local edition. So this is a big project. I know we've talked about in the past, but it's good to get an update. There's a total estimated cost of $23 million. Just less than 19 of that is funded through New York State's Upstate Airport Economic Development Revitalization Competition. Dan, what does this mean for the airport and the region?
Well, we're about halfway through a project that we at the county think is going to be quite transformative for the airport, with a key goal being somebody who has grown up in the county and always heard the airport referred to as a white elephant, that maybe it won't be that considered that anymore, that it will be considered the true asset that it is to Sullivan County. We are, of course, hoping that it will bring in new business that will help support it rather than the taxpayer subsidizing it, as they've had for basically the 55, 56 years of the airport's operation. The whole idea is to make the airport attractive as a business jet port. This new terminal is actually just one part of that, but it is, I would say, probably at this point, the major part of that. But we have brought in like Hatsola Air, who wants to make their world headquarters at the county airport. They're an emergency medical response organization that is completely aviation-related, sort of like the Hatsola ambulances you've seen, but air-based. And then, of course, we want to add more hangars and just have businesses, some of whom might have offices within this new terminal that is even now being constructed.
So where is the project at right now? Where are you in terms of the revitalization project? How's it progressing? And, you know, what has been accomplished so far and what's next on the timeline?
Well, we've certainly, if you look beyond just the terminal, we've improved our fuel services. I think over the past few years, we've doubled. I may be wrong. We may have even tripled our fuel sales over the past 5 years or so, because we're attracting more planes, as many jets as we are actual propeller-driven planes, because this airport runway, it's well over 7,000 feet long. It can handle up to a Boeing 727 if it needed to land there. Of course, we don't normally have planes that large there, but we certainly have larger business jets that have landed there, sometimes just to pick up some extra fuel on their way elsewhere. But you have to understand, we are really in a competitive spot right now because of our distance to New York City, which of course is even shorter by air than it is by car, or bus, or train. And we actually have the room that airports closer to New York City, like Teterboro or the Westchester Airport in White Plains, they don't have. So they have to charge higher prices. Sometimes people are on a waiting list to store their planes there or to have an office for their aviation business there. And that's what we're looking to create here, especially with this terminal, is space for people to have their offices and see what kind of amenities that the not only the county airport, but the county in general has. As we all know, it can be a very attractive place to live and work. And we want this airport to be a showpiece for that, because for some people, it may be the first experience they have of Sullivan County when they land at the runway and they come through the airport terminal's doors.
Right. Make a good first impression, Sullivan County, at the airport. Speaking of that terminal and where you want to make that impression, part of the new design is sustainability. That's an aspect of this, using recycled materials. Can you talk a little bit about that and tell us where that comes from?
Absolutely. One of the first messages that we want people to understand about Sullivan County is that we love our natural resources. We love our landscape, our rural quality of life, and we have literally put that into the building of this terminal. It's being supported not by huge steel I-beams, but by glued laminated wood timbers that can be shaped to really support the building as it needs to be supported. We're in some respects going back to that time-honored tradition of putting up a building with wood supports. But it also is using materials that recycled from the old, now demolished terminal. For example, the bluestone that could be found on the cladding and the floors of the old terminal, which is a Sullivan County product, that bluestone. We preserved as much of that as we could, and we're going to use it in the new terminal. There were about 80 tons of material that we were able to recycle. We couldn't reuse it in the terminal, but we could recycle it in our transfer station so that we weren't putting it into landfills. Also, the construction itself, we have energy efficient glass where we don't have the wood that'll let in plenty of sunlight, which will also retain heat in the winter. And we have an all-electric heating, ventilation, and air conditioning system that's going to use high-efficiency heat pumps that are integrated with geothermal wells. Also, of course, because it's a growing demand, we'll have electric vehicle charging stations that are powered by a small solar array right on site. And I just found out today from our Planning Commissioner Heather Brown, who oversees our Office of Sustainable Energy, who was very much involved in this, that this building will exceed, there's certain green standards, I don't remember the exact terminology she used, but certain standards the state has set for green building, and this terminal will exceed them. Of course, $18.5 million of that $23 million is coming from the state, but we weren't actually required to hit the levels that we decided we wanted to achieve. Because, again, we have an Office of Sustainable Energy. We are known throughout New York State as one of the leading, for lack of a better term, green-minded counties in New York. And we want this terminal to be a showpiece for that.
Now, in terms of the impact that these changes will have on the wider county, I mean, tourism's a big deal here in the county, bringing people here, also bringing businesses here. What impact do you expect this revitalization of the airport will have in the region, and specifically Sullivan County, in terms of business and tourism?
Well, one of the first and foremost things, of course, is we wanted to showcase for people who are flying in or even just driving to the airport to use it for some reason, to see that there's a vibrancy here. There's exciting things going on in Sullivan County. Of course, as I said before, we wanted to bring some relief to taxpayers where they no longer in the county budget would have to subsidize the airport, that we would have enough businesses, revenue-generating businesses, paying rent, leasing hangar space, building their headquarters there, storing planes there, buying fuel there, that the airport sustains itself. On top of that, we want it to be a generator of local revenue insofar as having a restaurant open to the public on the second floor. We are going to have a restaurant that has indoor and outdoor seating overlooking the runway, which if you've ever been to the airport, you'll know it's not just overlooking the runway. You're overlooking what feels like all of Sullivan County. You can see Walnut Mountain and Liberty. You can see the lights of Monticello. And on clear days, you can see the Catskill Mountains. Wow. So that will be open to the public. But also, of course, we want to attract aviation businesses that will find a more cost-effective way of doing business here that really isn't that much farther away from New York City than where maybe they were considering before.
All right. Well, Dan, believe it or not, that's all the time that we have for today, but I appreciate you coming on live here in the evening to give us that update.
No, it's, listen, I'm excited to talk about it. I'm a little biased, too. I used to fly. I had my pilot's license. So this kind of stuff thrills me.
Oh, that's great. Well, thanks again for your update, and have a good evening.
You too.
Well, that's it for the Local Edition. I'm Jason Dole. I'll be back here tomorrow evening, and we'll bring you even more news. Don't miss the State of the State address from Governor Hochul tomorrow afternoon at 1 right here on Radio Catskill. Right now, it is time for The Daily.